Welcome to the Captain Paul Watson Foundation podcast. I'm your host, Charlie. We have a wonderful episode today. We will be speaking with Lamia Essemali. She is the president of Sea Shepherd France. I did want to mention to everyone that we are now on Instagram. And if you look us up, you can find us. We are CPWF Podcast on Instagram. If you go on Instagram and you DM us, you can ask a question. And if you give us a question, your question might be picked and asked to Paul Watson himself. So please do go ahead and find us on Instagram. And if you have a good question for Paul, please do send it our way. And the next time we get a chance to speak with Paul, we are going to use one of those questions and get an answer from Captain Paul Watson himself. Okay, so without much further ado, let's talk with Lamia.
Hello, Charlie.
Yeah, hi, Lamia. How are you?
Good. How are you? Sorry, I missed your call.
No problem. No problem. Glad we can connect. Thank you so much for spending some time with me. I really appreciate it. If you wouldn't mind giving our listeners some background about yourself. And I guess your current role with Sea Shepherd France and how you got started.
So my name is Lamia Essemali and I'm the president of Sea Shepherd France. I started with Sea Shepherd 17 years ago. Basically, it's when I met Paul in Paris in 2005. Hearing him speak was like a life-changing moment for me because he was putting words on things that I had been feeling for a while, and he was making it sound like really clear. So there was a strong echo within myself to what Paul was, I mean, his philosophy. And the fact that he was not only about philosophy, it was also about action, direct action, being out there on the front line and doing things and stopping bad things from happening. That was like very, very motivating for me because we live in a society where basically since childhood, you are encouraged to just not do anything about anything and just stay in like the path that society wants you to be in. And to me, it was like another path, another way of being in life, mm-hmm. and a sense of freedom, and also the fact that I don't know, he's kind of made things that seemed impossible. He showed you by the example that it is possible. So that's a very driving force and a great source of inspiration that I believe is the DNA of Sea Shepherd until now. And that's very, very important to me. So I started like that. I mean, with that encounter, I went to Paul and I asked him how I could join his organization. And he asked me, well, are you ready to risk your life for a whale? And, well, I said, yes. I had never seen a whale at the time.
Wow.
And now I'm thinking, okay, I was in Paris. I mean, it was like not very... I mean, you say, yes, I'm ready to risk my life for a whale when you're in Paris and you've never seen a whale. That's something. I was feeling like it was something like genuine. I mean, I felt it when I said it. But it's another thing to then be confronted to that. And that's what happened in Antarctica the next winter. So I started on the ships. I started, my first company was in the Galapagos and then Antarctica. And when I came back to France in 2006, I set up Sea Shepherd France because I thought that, Sea Shepherd was such an amazing organization. At the time, we had one ship. The total budget was $1 million. And we had to cut the heat on the ship to get some more fuel to stay a little bit more with the whales. I was thinking, so we are a group of people ready to, you know, to risk everything, to spend Christmas away from our families and I mean do everything we can to save these whales and we cannot do it because we don't have enough money to pay for the fuel. I mean, that was so frustrating.
That
gave me the motivation to start Sea Shepherd in France. And I thought that France is such an important country when it comes to the ocean. I mean, this is the second largest maritime territory in the world. We have so much coastline, and I mean, we have 11 million squares of ocean. We have 11 million square kilometers of ocean under French jurisdiction. So it's huge. It's huge. It means we have a huge responsibility when it comes to marine biodiversity. And what I noticed is that in France, most people think that, the ocean is just that blue thing in your back when you lay down your towel on the beach. That's not my quote, actually. It's the quote of a famous French navigator named Eric Tabarly. Oh. And I say that often because to me, it sums up the situation. We are a key nation when it comes to the ocean. And most of us don't even know we have dolphins in France. So I'm like, okay. So there is a lot on Sea Shepherd France plates. We have a big mandate here. We have a big role to play. And when I started Sea Shepherd in France, I thought we would stay like a really, really small because French people are not used to such a combative way of action. You know, when it comes to animal rights or environmental movements, we are pretty shy. Mm. So I thought, okay, they're gonna be scared by Sea Shepherd. They're gonna think we are too radical. And actually, I was really surprised because I remember it was in 2008, and Paul was doing a European tour, and I was still in university at the time, and I had got that big room, 300 seat room for him to speak. And I was thinking, oh my God, I couldn't get a smaller room. It's going to look bad because it's going to look empty. It's too big of a room for us. And actually the room was packed. We had people sitting in the stairs, and Paul got a two full minutes standing ovation.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, so there is something going on. There is like, yeah. I mean, France is definitely a country where Sea Shepherd can get strong, like really strong. And it was the beginning of a big adventure.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, so I wanted to ask you, and you already touched on it. You mentioned that you met Paul in 2005 and that I watched one of your talks that you gave on YouTube, and I saw that you mentioned that. So I also wanted to ask you, what has been some of your most rewarding moments in your time leading Sea Shepherd France?
I would say 2014. 2014, Sea Shepherd France was leading the offshore team of Green Stop campaign in the Faroe Islands. And I remember we had that talk about the Faroe campaign, and it was supposed to be like Tai Chi. Like we were supposed to have only people on land because the ships were not available at the time. And I thought, no, we have to do something. We have to be at sea. And within 3 months, we actually built, it's not iron. I don't know how you call that in English, but like very solid, small vessels. Four of them.
Okay.
And we brought them to the Faroe Islands. And the strategy was simple. We were patrolling every day in the bays and try to find the pilot whales before the ferries find them and drive them away. And our biggest fear was that the whales would pop up within the fjord because it's too late. At that moment, it's very hard to drive them back out before the ferries get to them. So I remember we were really worried about that. And what happened that day is that there was a storm, and 80 whales with babies came to seek shelter in the fjord.
Oh.
And the ferries people obviously found out about it. and they were planning on driving them back out to another beach nearby where they could slaughter them, but the next day, because the sea was too rough because of that storm.
Okay.
So what we did is we brought our boats. We brought our boats that were stationed further away. We rode through the storm. We went to the fjord, and we drove these whales back out at sea.
Wow.
And that was a very, very, very powerful moment for us. And I remember that the Faroese were like quite upset about it. They said that, I've read in the media that they were feeling ashamed to be Faroese because, they're very proud people and with their navigating skills. And they said that they were actually worried that we would sink or like die in that. And I remember I did an interview on the local radio saying that to me, it was certainly not a victory against the Faroese. It was a victory for the whales. And that I didn't feel glad that we had beaten them in a way. I was just so happy that these 80 whales went back at sea. It's just that I think our motivation to save them was stronger than their motivation to kill them. And yeah, this is a priceless thing to feel that they swam back at sea because we had the courage to be there.
That's a wonderful story, and that must have been a very proud moment for you and everyone that was a part of that mission.
Definitely. Yeah, we were so proud. It was a very difficult mission, but it was also very, very effective because during that whole summer, they unfortunately managed to kill 33 pilot whales, but we drove back so many. And when we compare with the same period of the year before, they had killed 1,300.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So that's a big difference, a huge difference. The problem with that is that was a bit too effective. And I mean, the year after, we brought some other ship. The Sam Simon was there and the Balder was there. And the strategy was the same, to drive the whales out. And Denmark, the Faroese people actually issued a law that bans our vessels from going to the Faroese. The thing is, it's very frustrating, but the most frustrating part is that the Faroese don't have the means to stop our vessels from coming, but the Danish Navy does.
Oh.
And the Danish Navy is stopping us from going there. Actually, the Danish Navy arrested my team in 2014. They seized our vessels, our ships, and we managed to get them back.
Yeah.
But it's very, very frustrating because Denmark is a member of the EU. Denmark has signed the Bonn and Bern Convention on the Protection of Marine Mammals. It's absolutely forbidden to intentionally kill a marine mammal in Denmark, in Danish waters. And yet, they use military vessels against activists to stop us from enforcing the EU law. So this is not even legal. I mean, you cannot, as a country, use your military means to allow something that is forbidden in your own country to happen.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. But it's very...
Oh, go ahead.
It's very political. It's very political because Denmark wants to keep the Faroese under their...
jurisdiction
control,
or yeah, control.
There are a lot of it's like an autonomous protectorate. There are a huge economic interest in stake, and really that the Greens issue is very political, and the independent party in the Faroes that want to get rid of Denmark is using that. If Denmark doesn't defend the Greens, then they know that this is like the line that could make the independent party win, you know?
I see.
And Denmark don't want that to happen. So the whales don't wait much when it compares to all the offshore gas and oil and the fisheries that the ferries is enjoying. So, yeah,
wow.
It's all about money.
Ugh, Yes. Oh, that's horrible. Well, I hope if there's any folks listening in Denmark, we need your help. We need you all to put pressure on your government to stop using the Navy for illegitimate purposes like that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's sad, but unfortunately, it's so common. You know, it's like what happened with the whales in Antarctica. I mean, Fisher-Paykel is famous for these campaigns. But again, we were in an international sanctuary, and no country ever agreed to send their navy to protect that sanctuary and to stop Japan from illegally killing whales in a sanctuary. Why? Because Japan is the third economic power in the world, and no country wants to go against them.
Right.
So again, whales don't wait much when it comes to commercial interests. It's always the same story, unfortunately.
Yep. Absolutely. So Lamia, I wanted to switch gears I wanted to give our listeners your perspective, because you wrote a wonderful article on the Sea Shepherd France website, and I don't speak French, but I was able to read it using the translate tool on the web browser. And I really thought your article was wonderful. You explained your thoughts on the situation with Sea Shepherd Global. I was wondering if you might be able to describe those thoughts to our listeners, for those folks that haven't read the article that you wrote about Paul and Sea Shepherd Global.
Well, the initial problem is with Sea Shepherd USA, really. When Paul issued his resignation letter explaining why he was resigning, it triggered like ripple effects on Global. And the other directors of Global think that Paul's behavior is like an attack on SSCS. And because he's a co-director of Global, they decided to dismiss him, because Sea Shepherd Global signed an agreement with SSCS saying that they won't be attacking each other. And they issued a press release saying that there would be a working shoulder to shoulders. And, I refused to dismiss Paul. I mean, we didn't have a proper vote. It was like on the phone. I got called by Alex Cornelissen and Peter Hammerhead. And they told me about the situation and their thoughts, their intentions. And they said that Paul's behavior was being dangerous for the agreement that Global had signed with SSCS, agreement which I didn't sign, and I couldn't see until it was actually signed. I disagree with the strategy. I told them I disagree. But I was the only one to disagree, really. The others thought that that was the best course of action for Sea Shepherd. So we were six directors, Paul, myself, Alex Cornelissen, Peter Hammerhead, Gert Vance, and Jeff Hansen. And Paul and I were against his him being kicked out, really, and the other four decided that that was the way to go. So, yeah, I think that it's not the way it should have been done, because, well, first of all, out of loyalty towards Paul, but also strategically speaking, I didn't make that a secret. I mean, I told them. We just disagree on that.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you pointed out in the article that, you know, for all intents and purposes, Paul started Sea Shepherd in 1977, and it's hard to think of Sea Shepherd without Paul. And you make the point that...
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. You make the point, too.
I mean, Paul is the... Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Paul is the living incarnation of Sea Shepherd. I mean, of course, Sea Shepherd is not only about Paul. He couldn't have done it alone. But he is the one who inspired so many, to give so much. I know, I remember how I was feeling when I started with Sea Shepherd. I was so devoted to the organization. And I know, I remember how I felt. I mean, it was like, yeah, Sea Shepherd is a very effective tool. And Paul, as a person, as a human being, is very, very inspiring and encouraging. And he made me want and love to work with him. And I wouldn't have done so much. I wouldn't have given so much. And I wouldn't have felt so good if he had been different. And this is him. And no one can take that away from him. And of course, other people came along and did their part and were, I mean, part of the whole story. But if you remove Paul, it's like you remove the keystone of all of this.
Yeah.
And I just don't, it's like ripping out Sea Shepherd of its soul, really, to kick Paul out. I mean, it's just nonsense to me. And that's the reason why I was thinking, I mean, humanly speaking, it's not okay at all. It's wrong. And it's not loyal, but also strategically thinking. I mean, Paul is the best asset Sea Shepherd ever had,
yep.
ever had. And I think that no one within Sea Shepherd should ever feel embarrassed by Paul's past or his actions or the fact that he's controversial, because this is what made Sea Shepherd what it is today. And if you feel embarrassed by that, if you want to erase that, if you want to make people forget about all these actions that he has done in the past and all the things that he might be saying even today, sometimes he pisses people off, then it means that Sea Shepherd is not the organization that's right for you. So maybe you should move out. You should find another organization or set up your own organization, but don't try to change Sea Shepherd. That's the way I feel.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. If this isn't, so to speak, your cup of tea, then start your own organization and run it the way you would like to run it. The one thing that I can say about Paul, and I think it echoes your sentiment, is that, you know, Paul is such a encouraging and trusting person. He really empowers people to use their skills and their talents to do whatever job they can do to contribute to the cause, right? And we all know the cause is certainly bigger than Paul. We're trying to save the ocean and all of its, you know, inhabitants. And Paul understands that. And the wonderful thing about Paul is whatever you can bring to the table, whatever skills or unique things you can do, He embraces it, and he lets people be themselves. And I think, to your point, that's why people are, once they start working, they kind of become so passionate and they keep giving their all, because really they're enabled to do that. So yeah, I don't know.
Well, right. Well, you know, I think that, exactly, but I think that's the kind of thing that people who know Paul on a personal level know and understand. I mean, when I joined Sea Shepherd, I'm from a generation that got to know Paul from close, because Paul was on every campaign. We had one ship, and it was easy to get to know him, to see him on campaigns, and to spend time with him, and then you know how he is as a human being. Today, Sea Shepherd has changed a lot.
Yeah.
We have several ships. We have people on board the vessels that have never even met Paul. And Paul, because of his warrants, because he's paying at the cost of his freedom, because of Antarctica campaign, he cannot go on campaigns anymore.
Right.
So there is like a cut, you know, between him and the crews. And the volunteers that are outside of the United States. And this plays against him, unfortunately, because if people who are on the ships today knew Paul the way we know him, I think things would be more clear for them. And I don't think that what is happening today would be happening.
Absolutely.
It's pretty sad.
No, I agree. I also love that you pointed out in your article that, you know, while there's this, you know, disagreement going and, you know, human relations are complicated and such, you mention that, you know, some of the work that Global is doing is still important for the ocean, and that Sea Shepherd France would continue to support Global as long as, you know, those campaigns are still effective. So, you know, I at the end of the day, we're trying to save the ocean, right? we're all on board with trying to do that.
Well, right. As long as it's effective, as long as I'm proven they are effective, then we will support them. If that changes, then everything changes. But I see Sea Shepherd as a tool that is at the service of a cause that's greater than right. itself, you know?
Right.
And as long as we all focus on the fact that the ocean is more important than all of us,
right.
I think there are no wrong choices. But, you know, I think that's the problem with many organizations and Sea Shepherd might fall into that as well, you know? It's when the organization becomes more important than the cause it has been serving. And I've always been so proud to see that Sea Shepherd was escaping that, you know? And and the thing is, the situation is not that clear anymore. It has to be clearer. I think we have to set up guiding rules and a code of ethics,
yes.
A charter of ethics of what is Sea Shepherd about, what makes Sea Shepherd Sea Shepherd.
Right.
I think it's important that we write this down and that it's clear for everyone because otherwise, you know, we can slip slowly but surely slip away from what we were, and I don't think it would be a good news.
Yeah. Well, and you know, so that's a good transition because, you know, the last few episodes we've spoken with Paul directly about his new foundation, the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. And, you know, Paul is, you know, as determined as ever. He's obviously very excited about, you know, having, you know, starting this foundation and to that end, being able to get to the direct action and get back to the basics of serving the cause that, you know, he's been, you know, devoted his life to. And so, Lamia, as you move forward, I take it there's going to be some partnership or, you know, working together with Sea Shepherd France and the Paul Watson Foundation. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we would love to do that. The whole team in France is keen on that. And it just makes sense. I mean, it's just normal because I wish that it was the case also with Global. I don't know if that will happen. I hope so. But Sea Shepherd France is definitely going to work with Paul's foundation. And I mean, we are on the same page when it comes to, again, to philosophy and action. And again, I think we should stand united together. It's like, to me, it's the same family. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to working with Paul and his foundation. And I mean, Paul is also in the board of Sea Shepherd France. So again, it's the same family. It's
right.
The same thing.
Right. And in one of your announcements, you mentioned that Paul is on the board of Sea Shepherd France now. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, well, actually, it should have been for a while, you know?
Right.
It's just that it didn't happen, but it's not, I mean, there was no thought behind it. It's just that, I mean, to me, it's so obvious that anyway, we take into account what Paul thinks and stuff like that. But when Paul got dismissed from Global, we thought in France that we should have make a stand and have him in the board of France. Like officially,
right?
So, Yeah, it was a way of also saying that Paul is not parked away from Fisherpod altogether. That will never happen. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Paul should never have been in a position where he can be dismissed from Fisherpod anywhere. I mean, he should have had, like, a lifetime member, a lifetime board member place, you know? Like,
right.
He cannot be kicked out of his own organization. So I think somehow it's kind of sad that he had to set up the foundation that holds his name to be sure that he's not going to be dismissed. I think he definitely deserved to have the same security within Fisherpod.
Yeah.
But maybe that's something that can be fixed later. We shall see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Paul is resolute and he is determined. And, you know, this is a roadblock. And like you said, maybe, you know, years from now or sooner, maybe things get ironed out one way or the other. But until then, you know, there are campaigns that need to be done. And Paul, he's putting so much into what he's working on now, and it's exciting for all of us that know Paul, because he is pouring, you know, just like he's always done, but there's this energy, there's this, you know, new sense of, okay, this is a new chapter and I can push forward. So I think we're all very excited about that.
Yeah, well, Paul is being Paul, really, and he's being more Paul now with everything that's happening than he has been over the past months and couple of years because the situation in the USA was very complicated and he couldn't do or say what he had always been doing or saying. And to me, it was like watching him slowly dying out, you know. It was like blocked in a closet, and it was very frustrating. So I can say that he's back, like,
yep,
really, with what happened, he's back. He's back on track, and it's great to see, and it's motivating.
Yes.
And I mean, he's always been saying that he would never ever retire,
right?
And he's proving it. He's proving it. As long as he lives, he will be on the field, because that's who he is. And it's a great inspiration.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's wonderful that you said that. I totally agree with that, and we're all seeing it firsthand, and it's great. So Lamia, let's transition from, you know, Paul and all that stuff, and I wanted to ask you, are there any current campaigns or operations that Sea Shepherd France is working on that you would like just the world to know about right now?
Yeah, we have several campaigns all along the year. Well, the Dolphin Bycatch campaign has been going on since 2018, and we just finished the summer leg, and we are preparing the winter. So, well, Dolphin Bycatch, if I have to sum it up, is about all those fishing vessels in the Bay of Biscay in Brittany that are killing thousands of dolphins every year on the French coast because of non-selective fishing methods. So they are driving that dolphin population to extinction within the coming years if strong measures are not taken. So we've been able over the past few years to have very powerful footage of dolphins in the net to put mediatic and public opinion pressure on the issue. Things are moving too slow, in our opinion, but they are moving much more since we started these campaigns than over the past 20 years, where scientists were raising the alarm. And actually, the scientists who have been working on the issue for the past 20 years do say that they feel a bit frustrated that they have been trying to alert the government about the issue and they haven't been heard, never. And Sea Shepherd, by doing what we do, we manage to, well, move things ahead because we have the public opinion and we have the media. And I think that it's a very, very frustrating thing, you know, and it's not only about dolphins bycatch, it's on all environmental issues, and when it comes to the ocean also, scientists alert are not being heard by politics.
Right.
So I consider that one of our role as Sea Shepherd is to make the scientist message louder, to make people understand it better, and to put the politics in a position where it's not comfortable anymore to just ignore them. So that brings me back to what was being said by Sea Shepherd USA, that, you know, science is everything and we should do science over direct action. I'm referring to an article that was published saying just that. I'm a scientist. I mean, I have a master's degree in environmental sciences and a specialty in conservation of biodiversity. And, you know, I've always considered that science is a means to a greater end. And this is exactly what Sea Shepherd is doing and has been doing. It's using science as a way of being more effective. We plan our actions and we determine our priorities on the basis of scientific facts. Mm-hmm. But we do not have to do science ourselves or to put our energy and our money into doing science, because there are already so many who are doing it. The problem is, even when we know about the issues, no action is taken.
Yeah.
So if even us, who are the only ones actually taking action in the ocean, we don't do it and we go back to doing science as an end and not as a mean, then it doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, so that was about the Dolphin Bycatch campaign.
Yeah.
And we do also, sorry, I'm just going all over the place.
This is great.
We have also the Operation Nyamba. Nyamba means turtle in Maori. Mayotte is a French island in the Indian Ocean. Mm-hmm. And actually, as I speak, we have our team who caught two poachers last night.
They
were about to slaughter turtles. So, yeah, the issue in that island is that turtles come to lay their eggs, and there is a huge black market for the meat of turtles. So they cut them alive, really, to do turtle barbecues.
Oh, no.
And about 1,000 of them die that way every year. Since 2017, we set up teams that patrol the beaches, and we have done over 1,500 night patrols, and we saved countless numbers of turtles. We've managed to get arrested many poachers, and it's a very effective campaign. But we need to go to a higher level and be able to be there all year round, because mm-hmm. we managed to be there like 4 months a year. But really, the difficult thing is that there is a poaching season. It's like the whole year, so. We are in touch with the local police that did tell us that they see the drop in poaching when we are there. But after we move out, after a few weeks, when the poachers understand that we're not there anymore, then it comes back the same way. Mm. So we need to be able to make that campaign all year round. Yeah. And that's what we are working on now. It's a very, very, very effective campaign. So that's the other one. And we have Ocean Killers campaign. That's a campaign that's meant to bring the spotlight on the huge super trawlers that are coming in French waters. And earlier this year, in February, we managed to show the Margiris, which is the second largest super trawler in the world, that was fishing in the Bay of Biscay. That threw overboard. They didn't throw overboard, actually. They opened their net, and they released dead, about 100,000 dead merlon bleu. I don't know how you call that in English.
Menhaden?
Small fish. Maybe.
Okay.
Sorry, I forgot the name in English. It's a small pelagic fish.
Yeah. I think menhaden.
Maybe.
Okay.
I trust you on that one. But it's called Merlon Bleu in French. And we suspect that they've been doing upgrading. So upgrading is something that's totally forbidden, but unfortunately is being practiced a lot at sea, because, again, there are no witnesses. So basically, they will catch a huge group of fish, but then they will find another group of fish of a higher commercial value. So to make room, they will just abandon all those fish that they killed and go on the other group. So the footage was really shocking because it was like a huge wave of dead fish in the sea, and I mean it went to the highest level at the French government, and there is an investigation on that. And I think that we need to campaign to manage to get these vessels banned. Really, yeah. The problem is, like, France is part of EU, right? So even if France wanted to ban the super trawlers from coming to French waters, we couldn't. We couldn't because there are EU agreements. So these have to be fought at the European level.
Oh, wow.
As an example, you know, the Margaris came to Australia a few years ago, and there was such an outcry of the Australian fishermen, the NGOs, the local population, that the Australian government was forced to say, okay, you have to go. Yeah. You cannot fish in our waters because we're going to have a revolution here. So the Margaris left without fishing a single fish, right?
Okay.
And a few years later, UK tried the thing. They wanted to stop the Margaris from coming. But guess what? They couldn't. They couldn't stop it from coming because they were still part of EU. Well, now there has been the Brexit, so now they can do whatever they want.
Right.
But they couldn't do what Australia did because of that. So, you know, that these political things make it complicated. But I definitely think that's something we need to manage to change.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, and maybe another campaign that we have been working on over the past year, and that is going to be a big, big issue for the next coming years, is the offshore windmills. Offshore windmills are like a huge threat to marine life when it's not planned correctly.
Okay.
And in France, we have projects of offshore windmills in the heart of marine protected areas, in marine parks, in the middle of the corridors of seabirds and the migration path of dolphins and whales. And again, it's a perfect example of where science is completely ignored. We have scientists who are actually part of the French Minister of the Environment that issued a very, very interesting, powerful and argumented file saying that we had to carefully choose the places where we are going to install them, because the way France is doing it right now, completely forgetting about biodiversity, is like an environmental time bomb.
Wow.
I mean, you have to imagine that the seabirds and the dolphins that are migrating from northern Europe to Africa, especially the seabirds, they're going to have their corridors lined with offshore windmills all the way. And the problem with these things is not only the collision thing, because people think only about the collision, the risk of collision.
Right.
It's a problem for sure. But the main thing is the loss of habitat. The loss of habitat. These things are huge. They can spread up to 100 square kilometers in the key areas where these species are actually nesting, resting, and feeding. And they are going to be depraved and from key areas that they need to survive. And today, the number one threat on biodiversity overall is the loss of habitat.
Yep.
And this is what we are going to do to them. And because windmills are not popular at all on land, you know, now no one wants to have windmills near their home, you know, and there have been issues with cows dying and, you know, the value of your property is dropping if you have windmills next to it. So people don't want to have windmills. So, yeah, the great idea was to put them at sea. We're like, okay, so there's no one at sea, so let's put them at sea.
Right.
That's the worst idea. So basically we are alerting on the fact that it is important to fight against climate change. I mean, it's not us who are going to say the contrary, right?
Right.
But you cannot do that by sacrificing biodiversity. The ocean is the number one climate regulator.
Yep.
If you are going to sacrifice marine biodiversity in order to to fight climate change, this is a total nonsense. This is craziness. But there are huge amounts of money, we are talking billions and billions of euros. This industry is huge. And because they pretend to be saving the planet, all the safety measures, the environmental safety measures that would have made it impossible for any other industry to do what they do, well, they can get away with it. And they get authorization of destruction of protected species and habitat. They got, just for one project in Brittany, they got 59 authorization of destruction of protected species, among which we have critically endangered species.
Wow.
And this is not okay. This is not okay. The people don't know that because windmills have such a great image.
Right.
And when you start questioning that, people are like, okay, so you are pro-nuclear, right? No, we're not pro-nuclear. We are just saying that, hey, maybe windmills are not that magical, environmental-friendly solution that you've been told it was.
Right. Right. Well, yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, that,
so that's one campaign that we are leading as well, and we are doing like a lot of lobbying with the government to try to enforce measures to spare the key places for marine biodiversity. I mean, these windmill projects should be banned from all these key areas. And actually, I had a very interesting debate with the president of the renewable energy here in France. And I was saying, but do you realize that all these projects are in the heart of marine protected areas or right next to them? And his answer was to say, well, it's not illegal, is it? And I'm like, okay, well, maybe that's the problem. Maybe it should be illegal, you know?
For sure.
It's not illegal. Yeah, thank you for pointing out the very problem. I mean, this has to change. And one of our mission on that is to make the public opinion know about it, because people don't know about it.
Mm-mm.
People had no idea that these projects are getting authorization to destruct protected species. When we tell them, people are like shocked. They're like, how is it possible? And that's what I said to the minister that I mean, Amit. I tell them, you have to give a clear and transparent and complete information to people.
Yes.
Because the way it's being done is just, basically, it's just lying to people.
Yeah.
And our role is to make them know the truth.
Well, I'm so glad that you shared that with us, because I'm sure that there are a lot of listeners all over the world that are unaware and haven't thought of these migration corridors and the habitat loss that is associated with these windmill ventures. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that to our attention, because that's going to be a huge issue going forward.
It is, especially when you see the ambition, the world ambition in doing windmills like all over the place. Along the coast, you know, it's really is an ecological time bomb.
Wow!
But then people are like, okay, but we need energy, right? We need energy, so okay, we need energy, but let's not destroy the planet. You know, we need to save energy and also to be honest about the downsides of the so-called renewable energy. You know, that I think that's what pisses me off the most. It's presented as a miraculous, you know, solution.
Yeah,
and,
no,
but it's not right.
No, it's not. And look, there aren't easy solutions. There aren't easy answers. But to your point, if we are smart about it and if we're transparent about, you know, what's happening, then we can make better decisions. We can make better decisions for the planet. And to your point as well, you know, I think globally people need to understand that biodiversity is so critical to the function of the planet. Every species that we lose to extinction cripples the planet. It cripples all the ecosystems. It cripples the food chain and everything in between. And so our priorities as citizens of the earth should be to save every species every which way possible, and to prioritize that over the convenience of putting a windmill in a certain spot or whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, it's simply about survival, you know. I mean, even if you don't care about other species, which would be very selfish, but I mean, that's the case for some people. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't care, you care for yourself and you care for your children. So,
right,
you should care for biodiversity.
Yes. Well, Lamia, I want to just thank you for joining us today. It has been a pleasure speaking with you. And I also wanted to personally thank you for all the hard work that you do with Sea Shepherd France. You all do some amazing work, and I know that you're leading a great many, a number of wonderful people at Sea Shepherd France. So anyway, I just wanted to thank you because you're doing some tremendous things for the planet and for the oceans.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm pretty sure we'll have more to say soon.
That would be wonderful. I would love, please, for you to come back on and give us updates on these campaigns and certainly all the new ones that you plan to do in the future.
Yeah, lots of great projects ahead. So, yeah, it would be my pleasure to share that with you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Lamy. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
This episode of the Captain Paul Watson Foundation podcast is brought to you by Colonia Midas.
If the oceans die, we die.